Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll have Robbie Weinstein from 24/7 Sports coming up at 7:30. Get his thoughts on the Vandy boys as their season comes to a close yesterday. Gentry Estes at 8 o'clock from the Tennessean as well. Joe Rexroad, you've been working on a story for Tennessee football for a while here now, and it has now come out on The Athletic. You've just tweeted it out at theathletic.com, at Joe Rexroad on Twitter. Thank you. What have you been working on lately for Tennessee football?
Well, this is State of the Program. This is an annual State of the Program.
State of the Program.
So it's very long. So it's a lot of stuff, nitty-gritty on the team, but I got – a very nice one-on-one interview with Josh Heupel for this, and also have Tennessee's coordinators as well weighing in. And, you know, one of the interesting things about this that I think just is unique to Tennessee. Well, not unique just to Tennessee, but Tennessee is in a pretty interesting and, I think, rare spot right now, which is just the collective situation. And, of course, you hear different things about that on a daily basis too. But I did ask because, you know, recruiting has gone extremely well for Tennessee. It's going extremely well. Now, this is where you take it beyond Tennessee and Josh Heupel. But it's interesting to me to think about, I guess, how coaches are going to be evaluated. Are they going to be evaluated differently moving forward? But I did ask Josh Heupel about Spire Sports for this. Of course, that's the collective in Knoxville. You know, David Ubben he's written just about every word on these guys. I mean, he's been inside the building and knows the ins and outs of Spire Sports. They are, of course, the collective that has been gathering, raising money, and putting together deals. And essentially, people who – either their school don't do this or they just don't like Tennessee. You're like, wow, you're just paying for players. And essentially, that's kind of like what's okay now,
yeah,
above board. So, but I did ask Heupel about that, and his quote was, you know, quote, we don't really have any interaction with them. You know, we've embraced NIL, and he talked about his playing career, play for a powerful brand. So he's, you know, your academic success was the most important thing, but he goes through all the things that are very easy to sell, including Knoxville and how it's a dynamic opportunity, you know, in college sports and all that stuff. So, you know, like coaches, I think don't like to, they don't like to talk about this stuff. If they do talk about this stuff, it's like Nick Saban saying, Texas A&M. And then Jimbo's like, it's about our academic programs. And, you know, you get back and forth on that. But Alex Golish told me this too. Here's a quote. It's like, quote, it's like, man, we've kind of forgotten that you still build a team with culture and guys giving more of themselves they take from the whole, that there's still a team element to all of this, end quote. And his point was like, that's all I hear about. All I hear about is all you guys talking about the collectives and NIL. And I understand I understand the frustration there because there is a lot more. Like, there's still all the things that work to win in sports and be successful in sports, like, are still there, you know?
Sure.
And this has completely dominated the discussion. But does that – do coaches moving forward, do they – is it almost like you – like we're going to have like a GM-coach situation in college football? Like, we don't judge Mike Vrabel for who the players are. Judge John Robinson. Is it – you know, because everybody has these big – and this is before NIL and stuff. I mean, Alabama, Saban had like 27 – recruiting analysts.
So, I mean, interns everywhere.
Yeah. So, but increasingly, and especially if it's a little bit more like, okay, here's the money, here's the offer with the top kids. Is it, do we give coaches less credit for great recruiting classes? Like, are we looking at this like Josh Heupel? Holy cow. He's out there selling left to right. Incredible. You know, or also do you blame a coach as much if things don't go well in that way?
I think it's a great question. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the recruiting has changed to some degree. Now, it's not I don't think it's as drastically different now as some people make it out to be. Like, there's obviously always been some under the table stuff that's taken place, and now it's
significant.
Not. Yeah, and now it's not. So it's not like it's totally different from that regard, but the collectives now, I think, give maybe an outward face to it, where if you're sitting here as a fan, I do think increasingly as they go forward here, if you're not recruiting as well, the conversation is going to be less of, okay, well, Josh Heupel's got to go out and recruit better, and more of, they got to raise more money. Like, right, they got to get more money in this collective. Like, right. I do think from a fan standpoint, that conversation is going to change a little bit. Now, is that going to change the way you view coaches in terms of their job security? I don't know, because it's still about the results on the field, and at some point that's going to win out. I do think, though, like, if you're a fan base, let's say you're a Tennessee fan and recruiting dies off here in the next 2-3 years, is that going to be more on Heupel, or are you going to look at Spire Sports and be like, what are you guys doing? Where'd the money go?
Right. Like, you're going to, like, pick it outside Spire Sports.
Yeah.
You know? You know,
raise more money.
Yeah, yeah. Like, tweet. It's like when people get mad at an airline or something.
Yeah.
You know, they lost my United. Thanks at United for losing my bags. You know, what's up at Spire Sports?
Yeah.
But it is. It's and again, it's like, go back to before this. There's a huge recruiting battle. Alabama, Auburn goes down to the last minute, and you know those recruiting battles that go down to the last minute, where it's like, wow, a kid had his choice of places for years, but it goes down to the absolute last minute. What is going on, I wonder? And then, you know, the kid chooses Auburn. Well, the Alabama fans, they paid him. They cheated.
Yeah.
And if it went the other way, the bidding war, you know. I mean, it, like, and again, that's real. I mean, these things, that's how a lot of these go. But now it is. It's like, but you still all tied it to, like, this Nick Saban's just incredible in the living room, and he closes the deal. I mean, how do you resist, you know, playing for Coach Saban when, you know, in a lot of cases before, sometimes it was very simply, like, what's the best deal that I'm going to get to come here? So I wondered about, and I said this at a college football team meeting, and I think I got a lot of blank stares, and it's probably not going to happen. But I did think about, if recruiting becomes this thing that's, like, sort of, you know, not really the primary job anymore of the coach, or not viewed as much, does coaching salary inflation slow down at all?
Well, my other question on that part of it would be, if boosters and other people of the sort are more concerned now about making sure the collective has money, does that influence coaching salary? Does that influence facilities around the country?
I think facilities, for sure.
They've been spending money on facilities on just stupid stuff anyway. So I think there's some of that that probably needs to be scaled back. But I do wonder, moving forward, like, if you're – I mean, Danny White this last week is unveiling plans for Neyland and unveiling plans for Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Like, you have money to do that right now. How much of that money in the future is going to be tied up in the collective and not in the athletic department? I don't know.
Yeah, unless somehow things change, which I know some people want them to change, I'm still struggling to figure out how they're going to change them. I'm still struggling to figure out how any legal battles would be won on that front if they actually tried to cap this or whatever else you could really do. I mean, I just don't see it. Now, do I see everybody going this route? I don't know. I don't know about that. But Saban has basically said, sorry, folks. We're going to have to, again, like, you know, again, some of this is just shifting money.
We're going to have to get our collective going now.
Yeah. I mean, some of this is.
My hand's been forced.
Right. Some of this is just like, okay, you, and you, Booster ABC, who are giving money in this way, now it's in this way. Some of it really is that. But there is more, and I think the facilities money is going more to players. I don't know. Does some of the coach money that's just skyrocketed slow down a little bit and go more to players? I mean, I'd be good with it.
615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Has NIL changed the way you view coaches' salaries and coaches' recruiting moving forward? Do you think it will change the way you view it moving forward. 615-737-1025. We'll continue that conversation next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I got some tickets to give away to the stadium tour featuring Motley Crue, Def Leppard, Poison, and Joan Jett and the Blackhearts at Nissan Stadium coming up on June 30th. Be caller number 3 at 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to the stadium tour featuring Motley Crue, Def Leppard, Poison, and Joan Jett and the Blackhearts coming up at Nissan Stadium on June 30th. 615-737-1025. That is a concert that I'm sure Joe Rexroad will find some way to be at.
Okay, say it again. Motley Crue, Poison,
Def Leppard.
Def Leppard. Man.
Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
What's the date on this?
June 30th. I can see you like doing some mental gymnastics in your head right now. Okay, what am I doing June 30th?
Well, that's oh, dang it. We're going to be traveling that day. Dang it. I'm missing it. Ah, that would be awesome, though. I may have to catch him on another stop.
Apparently, it's a stadium tour, man, so you have some options.
So the headliner is Motley Crue?
I guess so.
Because, see, Motley Crue and Def Leppard both have a case.
Yeah.
I'd say they both have a case to headline. That's an interesting. It's almost like
No Poison?
Yeah. they're good as the three. They're good in the three hole. And then, I mean, yeah, I love some Joan Jett, though.
Yeah.
Joan Jett's got some jams too. Wow, that's quite a collection. A couple things I was thinking about on this, this topic with Tennessee, you know, and Tennessee and the larger question of, you know, coaching, recruiting, all that stuff. You know, as I'm talking to Golish, he's in a car, and he's driving all over the place because he's doing the exact same thing on the recruiting trail that coaches continue to do. They're out there. They're going to see players. Some of it, you know, a lot of it is also their own evaluations, but they're going to talk to coaches. They're going to talk to players, families, all that stuff. I mean, they're out recruiting hard, like on the road all the time. Like they are doing their job the same way. And I do, like, this does get losses. Like there are the absolute top players, the five stars that everybody wants. But most of the players on a college football team, and I believe this will always be true, always, most of them, the vast majority, are not making enough money to make their decision for them. They just won't be. I mean, you know, they're going to make some bucks here or there. For the most part, most of the guys on a roster, you're making the same kind of decision. Where do you want to go to school? Do you like the coaches? Do you like the system? Does it fit you? And, look, most guys who play Power 5 football do have NFL dreams. Now, most of them, vast majority of them, won't get there, which is part of one of my big problems with college football recruiting over the years is selling so hard your NFL links when it's like, I hope you're telling these kids that like 2% of them are actually even going to get a paycheck in the league, yeah. You know? But that's still other than, I mean, look, we all know like the Nico talk, right? Okay, so if it's $8 million over 4 years, you know, what's like but he could be somewhere where it's like, but no, I will be turned into the first pick here. Well, you go where you'd be turned in the first pick. It's not even close, right? So it's still overblown to
the,
me.
The
to
factor that I keep bringing up in this, though, is they're 17 years old when they're making this decision.
Well, yeah. But hopefully there are older people who are some part of the decision, right?
I understand. But when you're talking the amount of money that is thrown out there with some of these quarterbacks with $8 million, it's very difficult to pass that up.
Well, yeah. Well, if it's the only place, if it's one place, but that's where I think things will change, too, is you're going to see probably more people get into the sweepstakes on certain players. And then you get back to, okay, who do you like better? What offense fits you better? All that stuff, you know? I mean, well, there's still, like, recruiting and old ways of doing things that are going to apply.
What I wonder, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago with Mitch Light, that I think is a really fascinating question as they move forward here. We talked about the money with the coaches. Like, does that slow down at all? Does that change with more money being focused on collectives and trying to get players in? I wonder, once you go through a cycle of this, let's say 5 years from now, is the money the same? Like, does it grow? Does it shrink? Like, when you're having some of these top-level players, especially top-level quarterbacks, like, are they getting $8 million? Are they getting $17 million? Are they getting $4 million? Like, how does the money change as it continues to move forward? Because you know this as well as I do. There will be some quarterbacks that come in, and they're worth everything that they're getting paid because they're playing really well, and they're bringing a lot of money to the university, and they're going to maximize on their value. And there will be others that are five-star quarterbacks that come in that you give huge money to if you're some of these collectives, and you will never get that return on that investment.
Yeah.
Never. So I wonder how that shakes out as they move forward here.
Yeah, I do too. And I go back and forth because I think certainly there's some people who, first of all, if you have the kind of money where you're just like, yeah, I'll throw $1 million here and $1 million there and all that, then I would think that you'd have a pretty good sense for return on investment. But if you've been a booster for a college football team, and you've been in the game long enough, you've seen it. I mean, you've seen plenty of five stars or high four stars, or this kid's going to be a superstar, and it never pans out. Sometimes it's injury, but sometimes it's not. So you already have to know going in that there's some level of that. But it will be interesting too, you know, if it's a little bit more direct and above ground now. It's not just under the table. Here's a bag of cash. Do with it what you will. But maybe it's like, okay, I gave $1 million to the collective for this particular kid, and he's not starting as a freshman?
Yeah.
What's up with that, coach? You know, there could be more stuff like that. But, yeah, I suspect that money will still just keep going up, especially, like, for quarterbacks. I mean, even when everybody knows you're going to have misses. I mean, it's not like the NFL has changed from everybody chasing that quarterback and using a first-round pick on the quarterback, even though – we know that most of them won't pan out, right?
Sure.
I mean, you're just searching for that great player there. That can fast forward rebuilding programs. It can equalize things for one program. Like at Tennessee, you know, if Nico is incredible and is what he's cracked up to be as a recruit, well, you could have 2, maybe 3 years of him as your starter. And does that draw you closer, even if you're not there all the way with your roster, to some of these, you know, to the top programs you're chasing? So, but yeah, I don't know. Overall, like the pools, the collectives, I suspect it all keeps going up, but there's going to be some boosters that are like, gosh, I've poured a lot in, and specifically for this kid, and getting nothing back.
So if this goes the way that it could, and we don't know, but it could with what you threw out there earlier of not exactly like a GM coach, but kind of with the collectives and that being the focus of recruiting, do you think that these universities are maybe a little bit more willing to be patient with a coach if things aren't immediately going well? Like if the fan base, and maybe even to some degree the administration, views it as, even though they probably never say this, of, okay, well, maybe it's less about the coach and recruiting now and more about the collectives that you form. Do you think there's more patience that comes along with coaches at high level football?
I don't know. That's hard. That's hard for me to expect that.
Because
results are results.
Buyouts mean nothing right now in college football. They'll pay coaches not to coach left and right now in college football, and I wonder if that changes.
Yeah. No, it's a good question, but I suspect more patience isn't going to be part of it. But it's like, even beyond the collectives, it's so, like at Vanderbilt, for example, so Barton Simmons. You know, he's the GM.
Yep.
It's also like the personnel department and the people who are, because, you know, you're trying to, I mean, Vanderbilt's in a different spot. You're trying to find those kids and get in early on some kids, you know, who maybe, and then you can keep them if you find them. And then sometimes, you know, and Alabama comes in, oh, yeah, all right, come on. Yeah, we'll take you on. Let's go. Here's your offer. Obviously, you're accepting it, right?
Right.
But if you're So it's different situation for different programs. But the bottom line is you got like a GM, you got the personnel department, and then the money from the collective. But again, there's still, I mean, most of these places don't do it that way. I do think more will be. As long as nothing changes, do we get to the point where just about everybody does to some extent, more on the front end? And if you don't, then you're really going to struggle? I don't know.
It's a great question. Coming up next, we will add a Robbie to Robbie and Rex Road here on the program. Robbie Weinstein from 24/7 Sports covers Vanderbilt will join us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Vandy boys and their season coming to a close yesterday in Corvallis. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We are taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Tough day yesterday for the Vandy boys. They lose the first game in the Corvallis Regional, and they battle back throughout the tournament to force a deciding game yesterday, and they fall at the hands of Oregon State. So the first time since 2016 that they did not win the regional. And obviously there's been COVID tossed in there too since then. So it's been since 2016 since they did not win the regional. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Robbie Weinstein, who covers Vanderbilt for 24/7 Sports. Robbie, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. Kind of strange, I would say, for somebody, you know, I obviously cover Vanderbilt, to be done with baseball on June 7th.
I was going
to
say.
I'm used to going all the way to basically the end of the month.
Yeah, it's a very, very different feeling over there. So what did you make of the way that the regional played out for Vanderbilt? Obviously, it's a tough start in game one. And when you lose that first game, like the path to win just becomes really difficult at that point. But Vanderbilt, to their credit, really battled in this regional. What did you make of the way it played out?
Right. I mean, after that first game against San Diego, it just looked so much like what we saw in the SEC tournament, as well as to some extent against LSU and for much of the SEC season. That 3-2 loss, it's just kind of lifeless, you know, bad defense. The lineup really wasn't doing much. So at that point, I was not sure that they were going to beat New Mexico State. For them to come back and win the next three games by huge margins, I thought was a lot better than what I expected for them. And honestly, I mean, in that game yesterday, that decisive game against Oregon State, they were in it. And I think if they had held Thomas Schultz, the top reliever, back instead of throwing him in that 8-1 win against Oregon State when they didn't really need to, there's a chance they win that game yesterday. So considering that really poor start, they did a lot better than I expected, but this is Vanderbilt baseball, and you know, even if they go on the road to a tough regional, they expect to win it, and they came up short.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you bring up on Schultz, Robbie. I mean, I thought about that too. Now, they threw him three innings, right? They threw him three innings in the route. I understand the coaches will tell you, okay, you say we have a big lead, and use whoever, and then all of a sudden, oh, it's 8-3, oh, it's 8-5, and now it's like all of a sudden it's a different game. Like, I get the idea of, like, make sure you win a game, right? But I also, I guess I wonder if maybe just, like, an inning less or something would have made it possible to have him available.
Yeah, I think that decision ended their season effectively. So I will say at the time, he was warming up in that game. That was, I believe, in the top of the seventh, and Vanderbilt was up 5-0 at that time. Oregon State did score one run in that inning, and you know, the game was a little bit more in doubt. So I get it, and then once you warm the guy up, I understand the argument of, hey, might as well bring him in. But they didn't need to keep him in for 48 pitches, which is what they did, because they were up 8-0 at one point in that game, like after he had come in. And they could have taken him out after one inning of work or whatever it may be, and gone to somebody else and brought him back. I think the move would have been Christian Little and then Thomas Schultz. You got to go with your best available arms in an elimination game situation on Monday. And I really think that was the wrong decision. You know, you can It's hard to second guess looking back. Like, we don't know that Vanderbilt for sure would have won that game if, for instance, Schultz pitches instead of Patrick Riley in that situation, but it would have given them a better chance.
Robbie, why do you think really all season long, especially in SEC play, the lineup wasn't as consistent as most Vanderbilt fans hoped that it would be?
Well, I think certain aspects of how when Tim Corbin and his staff planned this roster out years in advance, I think certain aspects of it didn't go as expected, and that specifically led to the bottom of the lineup having some holes in it. The big thing is Carter Young arguably would have been expected to be the best player on the entire team for this season, and he hit a little bit over 200. You know, he's a very talented player. He's going to be drafted this year, and we'll see whether he comes back or not. If he does come back, it's quite possible he has a good season next year, but seems like there were some issues between the ears this season as far as confidence at the plate. That really hurt. And then Davis Diaz coming in as a freshman, very highly ranked recruit. And, you know, when you look down the road in Knoxville, Tennessee's freshmen are a lot of them are contributing a lot. And Diaz kind of had a tough season. Tate Colwick, another player toward the bottom of the lineup who had a tough season. Parker Noland kind of caught fire late, but for much of the campaign, he was sort of in the 240-250 range. So I think ultimately they had too many holes in their lineup, especially at the bottom end of it. And even though Enrique Bradfield Jr. and Spencer Jones and Dom Keegan are so good, there were at times kind of some automatic outs in the 6, 7, 8, 9 parts of the lineup.
Yeah, so moving forward, Robbie, I feel like their pitching next year could be really, really good. And I mean, I know it's tough to project next year without knowing some draft decisions, right? But right. Lay those out for us. First of all, the big ones. I know there's I know we had a MLB writer who had something recently about one of their top recruits who may be leaning toward, you know, coming to Vanderbilt. But then I look at the lineup. I mean, you know, Bradfield is going to be a star next year. Vaz, some of those guys, but like they've got some holes in that lineup. How do you view this team in 23?
I think that's spot on. Their pitching is going to be really good. Probably one of the best pitching teams in college baseball, but a ton of questions about the lineup. So the high schooler who could potentially get to campus that you mentioned is Dylan Lesko. He was considered by a lot of experts to be the top high school pitching prospect in the country, but he had Tommy John. And so the thought is, if he slides a little bit, does he decide to come to campus and play either two or three seasons, depending on what his eligibility is, and try to go in the top five of the draft after a couple of years at Vanderbilt? That's possible. But then I think he got TJ in like April, so it's not even completely clear what he would be able to contribute next season. But Sam Loboke potentially could come back for Vanderbilt. Coming in, he was a stud prospect, and he has pitched well for Vandy. He underwent Tommy John, I think, last season, but didn't end up playing this season. They held him back, and he could be their best pitcher next year if he comes back. That's definitely possible. People kind of forgot about him. Michael Doolin is another guy who had looked really good at various points in his career, and he has had multiple surgeries on his arm, so if he comes back and he's healthy, then that could be significant. Carter Holton, of course, looked like an ace down the stretch. So I think they're going to have a lot of good options on the mound. They're going to have a lot of good starting pitchers and a lot of good pitching depth. But in terms of the lineup, I mean, I think they're going to have to use the transfer portal personally, and that's not something that Tim Corbin has done a lot. Maybe one guy a year here or there, and sometimes, like with Baz, he was a JUCO guy, so that's a little bit different. But, I mean, LSU, for instance, totally revamped their team in one offseason with the transfer portal. So did Texas A&M, and those teams had really good seasons. Texas A&M is still playing, so I think that's something that Tim Corbin should look at as a way to juice that lineup back up, because if they don't do that, I guess they would be relying on young players to suddenly pop, and it's certainly possible with the way that Vandy recruits that could happen, but that's a scary thing to rely on.
Robbie Weinstein from 24/7 Sports on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So Robbie, as you look at, obviously Vanderbilt has such an established program and a tradition now of success. Tennessee has kind of burst onto the scene the last couple of years. What do you make of the Tennessee and Vanderbilt rivalry and what that could be as they move forward here with Tim Corbin and Tony Vitello?
I think it could be great. It's already kind of electric. It seems that, I think Tennessee's players at various points have openly said that they don't like Vanderbilt. I don't really know what Vanderbilt did to them other than win a lot, but hey, it's a fun in-state rivalry, and I think it could be great as long as Vanderbilt, you know, does get back to being what they usually are. You know, it's kind of disappointing that this year, when Tennessee is by far the best team in the country, that Vanderbilt couldn't put a little bit better product on the field to compete with them better in those four games, because, you know, just for fun purposes, I think that would have been exciting. It would have been electric. Instead, it was a four-game sweep for Tennessee, the three games in the regular season and then the SEC tournament game as well, which was not close. But for sure, I mean, I expect Tennessee, you know, of course, they're a pretty heavy favorite to win the College World Series this year. They're not going away anytime soon. And it's going to be interesting in terms of, you know, going after players in the state. Vanderbilt doesn't really rely on in-state recruiting. If you look at the best players on the team, most of them are from outside of Tennessee and even as far as California, Massachusetts, in terms of Spencer Jones is from San Diego and Dom Keegan is from near Boston. But at the same time, Chase Burns, you know, I would imagine Vanderbilt would love to have a player like that. He was really highly rated. So there are going to be some battles that are going to be made more interesting, I think, going forward. But no doubt, I don't expect Tennessee to go away at all. So I think that this is a rivalry that is really going to be here to stay.
All right, so Robbie, I wanted to get quick thoughts on three other Vanderbilt programs. Just, you know, your quick thoughts on what's ahead in this coming season and how recruiting is going on football, men's and women's basketball.
Sure, I'll start with football because that's sort of the most timely right now. They are hosting official visits each weekend in June, and they picked up a commitment over the weekend from a three-star linebacker from Alabama who is pretty good, and I think they've got another one coming down the pipe. So, yeah, that's kind of going to be interesting because they lost some commitments earlier in the spring, and they're looking to rebound, but they did a good job of doing that last year. And of course, Barton Simmons, the general manager, you know, I think he's kind of crafty in finding some of these guys that other teams haven't discovered yet. I would say in terms of the fall, I mean, Joe, you watched him last year. Like, they've got a long way to go, and I wouldn't expect more than like three or four wins. Men's basketball team, I think they did a decent job in the transfer portal of trying to, you know, add some guys to help replace Scottie Pippen Jr. It's going to be a good defensive team. I don't think they did an amazing job because the offense is going to be an issue. And then the women's basketball team, I mean, that's probably the main program out of those three that I would suggest is really has positive momentum and is probably on the rise because they Shea Ralph really got a lot out of that team that the roster had been just totally thinned out by transfers at the end of the Stephanie White era. They were competitive last year, and they're bringing in a number of good transfers. So that's a team that could be competitive, whereas I think football and men's basketball will be fine, but football's got a long way to go.
Well, Robbie, great stuff. As always, appreciate you taking time to join us this morning, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks, Robbie Weinstein, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road from 24/7 Sports. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant. Joe Rex Road's rant of the day. You're going to like this one. 615-737-1025, your thoughts as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
So I'm listening to the morning show today. I went on a walk this morning. And I'm on my morning walk listening to Robbie and Joe. And Joe, of course, and I knew I was so expecting this too. I was like, goody. So I knew Joe was going to get all on his high horse about this, right? Like, this is like right up his alley.
Oh, yeah. He loves a good media scandal.
Oh, God. He loves it. So it was like, I mean, they should not have gone with this. I mean, the fact that they did and just...
They shouldn't have gone with it.
They shouldn't have.
It was irresponsible.
But it's the writer holier than thou. Like, you know, like the media writer that, you know, like when we wrote the story about
bad.
Aaron Rodgers buying a house, and the local scribes were, you know, holier than thou about, oh, you know, just because he's buying a house doesn't mean. Oh, what was that Adam Schefter reported? Oh, the Titans were interested. Oh, okay. Like, now it's different because Adam Schefter reported it, but it was just us talking about that he's open to join the Titans. It's like, oh, yeah, this is not news. This is And so, anywho, Joe was so on the high horse about it. Well, I mean, I remember, what was it, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? I remember having to track down whether or not a rumor that started on the Robbie and Rex Road show. I had to track down whether or not it was true that John Hines got a 6-year contract. And when I talked to my source, I said, hey, I go, did you guys sign John Hines a 6-year deal? Guess what? I was like, look, man, I tuned into Robbie and Rex Road, and they were talking about whether or not Hines signed a 6-year deal. So I put out there that he did not sign a 6-year deal. Then there was the guy texted into the text line like a couple weeks ago and said that Adam Schefter reported that Treylon Burks did not take his Allegra before practice, and that was why he had allergies, and that Burks is expected to be full go going forward. And Robbie and Joe talked about that. And then the next segment, that same guy felt bad because he, you know, he screwed with Robbie
started
and Joe.
Started this whole storm.
Then he was like, hey, I was just playing around. That was just a joke. And so I texted Joe, and I was like, you can't be mad at this guy for falling for some of the things that you've fallen for. You can sit there and say, hey, man, like, you got to do better, which is what we've done. But you can't sit there and be like, that is irresponsible. That is.
It is irresponsible.
But you have to at least address that you've done it, too.
Yeah.
Well, you think he did that?
I don't know if Joe and Robbie did that or not.
No,
I do know for certain. I was listening to Robbie and Rex here. The last segment, Joe said, I apologize for running with something that was not true.
He says it's not close to being the same thing. I think it's pretty close to being the same thing.
I think what the broadcaster did on Friday night was way more irresponsible than what Robbie and Joe did. Because stating as fact that somebody has a PED suspension.
Did you hear what the announcer said?
I saw a clip of it on Twitter.
I haven't heard what the guy said. So I mean, like, again, this is my thing.
But that is so much worse.
I
so much worse.
But it's to me, it's kind of all the same. It's just, it's bigger. Like, so it's bigger when
it's
about
worse.
I mean, again, the point
of that is a really big accusation to say that somebody is suspended for PEDs.
I know, but I guess my bigger point here is that just like they got duped, this guy got duped. And that's the only
point
I'm making.
And to run with it is very irresponsible.
I mean, look, all I know is
that... To state it as fact is different than reading a text from the text line.
Well, again, they read the text from the text line that Schefter reported, and then they talked about it as if it was Schefter reporting. And then the guy said, no, I'm kidding. And then they were like, oh, we were just, you know, whatever. And that happens. It happens.
It does.
So that was a nice little diatribe by Jared and Caroline there. Joe had many different facial expressions if you're watching on our streaming platforms throughout that. Joe, I turn things over to you for your Rex rant.
Well, first of all, this is a Rex and Rob rant.
It
you're going to join in with me.
Me too.
It's a Rex Rob Red rant. I have not heard any of that. I heard, well, you texted me, Michelle.
I was infuriated.
Well, my favorite part is definitely, have you heard it? Well, I mean, listen to it, but you know. Let me just blab and blab and blab without having a clue. Okay, so, see, listen. Like, Jared, I think it's cool to be a contrarian. And that's what he's being a contrarian, okay? But you don't want to be a contrarian when your view is contrary to basic logic, basic processing of clear information, and very basic understanding of the industry in which you work. That's too much contrarian. Remind me of the stuff. Like, we read, a caller called about John Hines. Is that right?
Somebody called in about John Hines and said that he had a 6-year deal.
And we're like, 6-year deal?
And
what?
I said, I think the direct quote was, well, that's not been reported. I saw that as somebody put that on Twitter, but that's not been reported anywhere.
So on the show, in real time, someone put that in front of us, which happens all the time.
Correct.
And we said, nah, it doesn't sound right. And quickly it was debunked. Yeah, I think Jared did
text
think
we
that
did
day.
Think. I think we did say after that, well, if they did give him a 6-year deal, my goodness.
Yeah, well, that'd be crazy.
But we literally said after the call was made, that has not been reported.
So people on the show listened to us take in that information. The other thing was, and I did apologize because I don't remember how we, but I don't remember exactly how we reacted to it, but we were like, okay, we need to find this tweet from Schefter, right?
Yeah.
So it may have gone to the next segment, but typically when someone says, Schefter reported this, okay, I'm reading it off the text line. Let's go find the tweet. Okay, no, that's not there. Yeah, then the guy texted. I don't know if it was the next segment or it was 10 seconds later. Regardless, again, we're taking in something. We're saying, here's who it's from. Someone on the text line. Okay, so you could go about it and read it and say, oh, I'm not going to say that out loud. I'm going to check on it, and then I'm just never going to say it out loud. That'd probably be better. But you're actually comparing that to this that you didn't even listen to when you started just running your mouth. Shut up with this crap, Jared. I mean, come on, man.
He does this way too much.
I mean, this is so bad. And thank you, Caroline. I mean, Caroline, you know, trying to talk some sense into him. This guy, you can say media high horse or whatever. First of all, I think the bigger criticism people make is that media don't go after each other, right?
Yeah.
That's what I hear. You guys always want to protect each other. And
it's not,
you know,
it's not the media high horse. It's the writer.
Well, that's right. Yeah. The writer high horse. Dude,
scribes.
I don't care what part of media you're in. This guy didn't say, I heard from someone I saw on Twitter. He said as fact that a kid tested positive for PEDs and that the whole team is about to be tested for PEDs. He didn't. He said it on there like, gosh, that's going to be awfully interesting for the Vols. I mean, do we have that? Do we want to play? Did you ever listen to it, Jared? No, then he listened.
No.
He listened to it. He's like, oh, yeah, no big deal. Is that right? Dude, come on. Like, you're making yourself look ridiculous.
Well, look, Jared is the king of taking things out of context and then just saying stuff. So I'm not really surprised by this, but it just is what it is. Just let him do his thing.
So I need you to be mad.
Yeah, listen, I was listening to this and I was just like, my jaw dropped. I'm like, I need to text Robbie and Joe right now, right this second.
I mean, but like beyond, because so what this is basically it puts in a spot where like we're defending ourselves. But honestly, like, I'm trying to defend everyone's ears against completely stupid combinations of words that you are trying to pump into the air, Jared. Like, seriously, how could you listen to that thing and not understand that it's a huge deal? It is a huge mistake. He should be punished for this. I mean, you can't do this.
Well, did he say he didn't listen to it?
He didn't listen to it.
So he never did at all?
I don't think so.
Do you have it?
The ESPN?
Yeah.
Give me a second.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, we don't have time for that.
We don't have time for that? I mean, come on, you have to, like, apart from, like, you know, taking it to us and all that stuff, which was dumb, please tell me, Jared, that you understand how big of a mistake this was. It's not a high horse thing. It's,
well,
like,
he's not going to do that. You understand
it, that,
right?
Well,
this is what he does.
But this is Jared where you need to, Jared gets in this thing where it's like, here's my take. It's a Skip Bayless thing. Here's my take. And then no matter what else happens, whatever information comes where you could change, you're just, nope, that's my take. You got to get off that, man. You got to get off that routine. This is one of your dumbest yet, and that is saying something, my friend.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessee, and we'll get his thoughts on the Titans in OTAs, also his thoughts on the Vols as they head into Super Regional play as well, taking on Notre Dame. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.